Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A tale of tragic magic or something a little more ecstatic. Let's get cracking to find that lore we've been lacking. It's the Lore Boys here.
Oh,
I'm Ethan. Damn. Joining me today is
James Miller with
Peter O'Donohue.
Here we go.
A little really, lore what boys else behind were you expecting?
A little lore boys behind the scenes. We never rehearse or talk about ahead of time who we're going to throw it to. So there's always this moment, especially when we're recording remotely, where it's like, I'm joined with. And both the other people are just there like, I don't know if he's talking to me or if he's talking to the other guy.
It's authentic. It's like a satellite delay on the news where it's just like, we've heard that 20 people have died in this tragedy. Do you want to say more on that? And then there's just the... Yeah, the scene is actually quite gruesome. It's just like, it takes the oomph out of everything. But
It keeps us on our improv toes.
You never... each other in person, which always kind of helped.
Yeah. I mean, eye contact, too. You can't make eye contact here because I can only look at my webcam.
What we did do, though, is we all have... It goes Ethan, then myself on top, and then Peter on bottom. And we followed the webcam conformation.
We
the
do stack. Our best.
Yeah. We established that the best part of an Oreo is the cookie, and frankly, I could do without the cream.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not, but I... fully endorse that statement. The cookie is the best part of the Oreo.
Hundo P, dude. Do you remember? Sorry, before we get into this, do you remember?
Oh, we're getting into this.
The 21st of September, but also like calorie-wise 100 calorie bag that was just like Oreo chips. It was just.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That shit was great.
It was bomb. Yeah, absolutely.
That was my jam.
Yeah. Let me ask you about club sandwiches, though.
Okay, sorry. That's never been aired. Okay, don't you air our dirty laundry? Like,
no. Nobody can find everybody. Fucking club sandwiches.
Welcome to the Lore Boys. As you can tell from the title, we're talking about Magic: The Gathering. As you can tell from our conversation, we're still in the midst of whatever COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic we're going through. But we didn't do this. We're doing our best to get through it.
I did it a little.
And we want to thank you guys for tolerating Jamie doing it a little. And we want to thank you guys for being here with us, joining us on today's episode.
Jamie does the most breathing in public because he has a dog. So frankly, he's probably the most responsible for this.
Yeah. I'm the most overweight too. So just.
God damn it.
So we're talking about Magic: The Gathering again. Now, Peter, would you say you're more of a Johnny, Spike, or a Melvin?
Ooh, I feel like that's a trick question. I'm going to take Melvin.
Okay, very good, very good. Jamie, how about you?
Well, I got to be the Spike, man. Or is it Johnny Spike or Johnny?
Johnny Spike or Melvin. I give three options. There's more options, too. This is an IRL thing where people, when they're describing Magic, like people in the Magic the Gathering community, when they're describing archetypical Magic the Gathering players, they have like predefined... character types, I guess.
So it's
like
Johnny, Spike, and
there's a lot of them. I think there's one. Vorthos is one. Melvin is one, and Melvin's like a nerd who follows the rules too much. Johnny's like a guy. Johnny's the bad boy, you know. Spike is like chaotic evil, I think, or chaotic neutral. That's just a fun little aside for you guys, really.
Okay, I wanted to be Johnny Spike because I thought it was one person, but
sort of
I guess
guy
I'll
for that
Spike.
Matter.
Okay, yeah.
But chose to be Melvin. Maybe that makes you more Melvin than you think, okay?
I said that. I thought it was a trick question. I made that very clear. Because I thought Melvin would have been the name that somebody gave to the guy who just happened to end up as, like, the Giga Chad. Like, you can't blame him for having a bad name. Apologies to any Melvins who listen to the show.
So I guess we'll... Because this is not a true sequel. this is kind of blending of at least two of the stories that we've talked about on the show before, with possible potential for a third tie-in in the future. So who remembers anything about any of our previous Magic episodes?
I remember Jessica Thrice Touched story the most.
Okay.
Out of all of them, about like a boy coming out of the woods, going to like an evil town and fighting in the arena, eventually getting corrupted, getting the whatever the MacGuffin was.
The Mirari.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then losing the Mirari, something about oceans flooding people. Then Jessica gets revived by the Mirari, I wanted to say, and it doesn't go as planned, but it's kind of rough, but that's
great. That's more than you need to know for this episode, for sure.
Okay.
I'd say the one thing is they came from a continent called Otaria, and the one notable thing about Otaria was that it wasn't heavily impacted by the Phyrexian invasion, which we talked about on the other episode
with Urza.
A little bit with Urza, the brothers war. So we talked about Urza and his younger brother Mishra, who were born in the same year on the first day and the last day of that year.
Oh, so they have bordering birthdays.
On gifts. Bordering birthdays. Yeah,
because the year rolls over at a certain point. Yeah.
But different birthdays. So one older, one younger.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Well, that makes
almost sense. Just a day under a year apart.
Exactly. Exactly.
Got that math all figured out. Let's get to the story now.
Okay, we've got the calendar.
So Urza is Magic the Gathering's Jesus, because as Peter was just mentioning, calendars. The Magic the Gathering calendar in Dominaria starts with the year of Urza and Mishra's birth. So year zero, and there is a canonical year zero, which there isn't in real life, I'll have you know. There's one BC and it goes to one. But that year is the year of year zero in Magic the Gathering Dominaria is the year of Urza and Mishra's birth.
Okay.
I never thought about that. There was never a year zero. They just started.
No one would know.
That's one to one.
Fun fact, they started with one.
Yeah. Idiots.
big dummies.
Well, it's because it started in North America, we start with like one is the first floor. If it was in Europe, it would start with zero because you're counting the first thing, right? You ever been on a European elevator?
No.
I mean, been to Europe. When you count to 10, you don't start with zero. You start with one, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're not on the zeroth floor. You're on the first floor.
Exactly.
Well, no, my office went from RC to one.
Oh, European.
So RC was technically zero, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I guess no. Wrong. I don't know.
Chaussee.
No, I... Yeah, anyway. Hey, this isn't the elevator lore episode of the Lore Boys, so
I don't know either, if I'm being honest.
No, that's the Floor Boys. That's our other podcast that comes out Thursday.
Love the ups and downs of that podcast. It's just wonderful.
Yep.
It's our architectural channel.
Yes.
Every time you think we hit a plateau, we just keep going. It's crazy. that's the Jessica storyline. Pete, do you remember anything else from the Urza and Mishra storyline?
I remember they got into a fight with each other, but there was something where it wasn't actually multiple people, it was multiple clones of the same guy that all started fighting with each other. Was that from that one?
No, I think that was from some of the other ones. Not super important. Like I said, like this episode's not going to hinge on those. It's going to weave into those in its own little way, but it's not going to depend on them in any way. So important notes, Urza and Mishra, they found two stones under the capital city in Dominaria. The main plane that we've talked about throughout these two story arcs, not so much the Gatewatch story arc, which we talked about a bit with like Jace Bellerin and Liliana Vess and all them.
Yeah.
So they found two stones underneath, the Might Stone and the Weak Stone. They both went kind of mad. Mishra went much more crazy due to them. Mishra had the Might Stone, Urza had the Weak Stone. And these stones, they're like Thran artifacts, and Thran are like the ancient humans that lived in Dominaria. And they developed like insane technologies and powered machines with magic and mana, all of which that technology was kind of lost Yeah, Jamie's doing a cheers for
Magic Rocks.
Ancient Robots.
Ancient Robots, I think. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Right. Here's some Ancient Robots that we've drank to before, but I'll crack open a beer for it.
We have to. I was already thinking about the jokes that we said on the last one rather than remembering. I was like, oh, the strong force was the Might Stone and the weak force. We made physics jokes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not even sure. The Chad Stone and the Virgin Stone, which probably came up at some point as well.
That might have been both, honestly.
Yeah.
We're very funny.
So Urza also would rage war on a plane called Phyrexia for millennia.
Is this the zombie robots?
Yeah, that's exactly. The Phyrexia is the Phyrexian horrors. When we say the invasion set, it's the Phyrexian invasion.
Yeah.
And it's the invasion of these mechanical zombies that like invaded Dominaria. Yawgmoth was the enemy, the lord of Phyrexia. He's like a super powerful entity who went there and took control of all these creatures. He's like a super powerful planeswalker.
The working title of our episode on that is called Yawgmoth and Yams, if you're looking for it, because it's about sweet potatoes for some reason. I don't fucking know.
We might have mentioned a yam at some point.
We
might have just not have said a single funny thing that whole episode, so I had to just come up with a title in post, you know. So Yawgmoth would hunt Urza across the plains, never allowing him to rest. The mechanical horrors spreading plague and destruction everywhere they went. When I was reading, they went to, like, Urza was just running away from Yawgmoth for a long time because Yawgmoth was like, you want to destroy my plane? No way, dude. Nobody that means my plane harm is getting away for free. And so he just, like, chased him forever. He knew that Urza was the greatest threat to his dominion over Phyrexia and all his creations. They went to a plane called Serra, which is like Serra, kind of like Terra. And it's very green and verdant and like so much life. And Urza got healed there and Phyrexia took it over completely because Urza led them right to it.
There's so many things here for my zombie robots to fuck up. I'm going to have a fucking field day.
Exactly. So Urza's war with Phyrexia lasted millennia. I think it was about like a little over 4,000 years that from like zero, the year Urza was born, and he died in 4,000 something.
He was beheaded, correct?
We'll get to how he dies, but he certainly was not beheaded. I don't know who you're thinking of, but are you thinking of King Louis the 17th?
No, one of your Magic the Gatherings ended up as just like a floating head at some point, didn't he?
Yes. It might have been Urza at some point, but he got a mechanical body, so I don't think that was the end of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like getting a mechanical body is the sequel to being beheaded, regardless of whether or not you die.
Yeah, all the stories of Dominaria really revolve around Urza.
Okay.
And so I guess if notably stories are revolving around you and you become a sentient floating head at some point in your existence, like people are going to fixate on it. You know what I mean? It's like if you have like a funny birthmark on your face or something, people are just going to obsess about it.
Harry Potter's got the scar. Urza clearly was never a floating head.
Exactly. Joaquin Phoenix has that little, that little cleft lip scar, you know, it's like,
does.
It's like, I don't know why I know that about a celebrity, but I do.
You pick up on Ford has the chin scar.
Exactly, yeah. Some people have butt chins, you know? We try not to make fun here.
I watched Pulp Fiction yesterday, and boy, does John... Yeah, Pulp Fiction, he has, like, one of those butt chins, but he's, like, a heroin addict, and he's got way too much meat on his bones.
In the movie, he's a heroin addict, not John Travolta.
I don't know that.
It might be, yeah.
He was in that movie called The Fanatic, if you've ever seen anything about that.
Not.
It was directed by... Oh, shit. Written and directed by...
Ridley Scott.
No, something much worse. Fred Durst.
Oh, okay, is much worse than anybody I would have...
Ethan, your hat's on way too straight to talk about Fred Durst.
Talk about Fred Durst.
Oh, yeah, boy.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, we're backwards now.
Welcome to the Fred Durst... Welcome to the Limp Bizkit episode of the Lore Boys. I guess for anyone who doesn't know who Fred Durst is, which we might have a lot of listeners who don't even know who Limp Bizkit is.
And the hot dog flavored water.
Yeah, the chocolate starfish.
Just quick Fanatic lore. There is a scene in which a different actor is driving around with his son listening to Limp Bizkit on the radio and...
Oh,
says
in
like,
the Fred Durst directed?
Yeah, written and directed. Oh. And he's just like, man, you know what? Limp Bizkit was kind of underrated, but I still like them.
No way.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Look up The Fanatic. It's on Canadian Netflix, so it's got to be on every other Netflix on Earth.
All right, well, I guess we got to keep this lordship rolling. Right?
Yeah. rolling.
What?
One other thing about Urza, notable about him was he creates things. He makes like mechanical inventions.
He does ASMR similar to paintings.
Yeah, so he won his wife in a contest with her wife's dad by creating a jade golem who could open a really heavy door, basically. The contest was like, who could open this door? And he built like a giant jade golem that could do it.
Dude, I wonder if that guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, if he could have won that competition. He's a pretty good scientist. Yeah, Rick Moranis. He was a really good scientist. He can make things really small or really big.
He could have just made the door really small. Yep. Easy to open.
Yeah, little tiny
step over it at that point.
Exactly.
You wouldn't need to. I mean, why still open it?
If you could step over a door, would you not say that it's open?
Shrinking a door. I was going to say philosophical question. Is a shrunken door technically open?
Yeah, because when you watch sci-fi movies, the doors just like shrink, right? They like shrink to the sides. They go.
Okay. Yeah, but that means that you can close it again by making it big again. Like if you only have the shrinking machine, it's no longer a door. Now it's just something you step over.
Is any space that's not a door open? Like an open door?
No, a door would be a passageway. Like, okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah, is a shoe on the ground just an open door? Because I can step over it?
Oh.
I don't know.
No, I don't think
so. Philosophical questions.
Yeah. I think it's got to be close to flush. I'm looking at a doorway right now, just to be sure.
Yeah, okay, I know where you are in your apartment. There's no door there.
Yeah, there
it's
is.
The hallway.
There's a. Remember, we put the big mirror there,
and
one of our first recordings. And
yeah, there's no door. There's a doorway. There's no door.
Well, yeah, I know, but it has the frame, and
yeah,
I can picture
a
door.
There's no door. Is an empty door frame a door? That is another
Dude,
question. Now
we hop
it is.
We shouldn't have brought up politics.
Into,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No politics. We hop into worlds and we create worlds around us based off of things we read on a screen. I can picture a door in a doorway. Thank you very much.
But other people who hop into worlds, planeswalkers.
Boom. Nice.
Yes.
There we are.
Jamie loves the segue.
So if you're a guy who's super smart, big nerd, love inventing stuff, and your home plane is kind of at risk of being invaded by metallic horrors from another dimension, what do you fixate on?
Magnets.
Pretty close. Oh. Jamie, you want to take a guess?
Hot pots to melt them down.
Less close. It's okay. Time travel, of course.
Magnets, what does magnets have to do with time travel, and what aren't you telling us?
There's magnets in a time machine, obviously.
Okay.
There's
bound to be, right? Magnets. They do crazy stuff.
This is how he knows there was no year zero. He went back. He got his magnets together.
I just got all my magnets and all my crystals in my tub. And, yeah. That's like a throwback to our actual Urza episode, probably, because it was like episode 16 or something like that.
Oh, so long ago. God, we're old.
So if you guys don't remember, the Phyrexians are spawned from a group of Dominarians who had to live under the city near all this like ancient technology that just oozed radiation and just made them super sick.
Right.
Yawgmoth then said like, hey, come to my plane of existence and everything will be hunky dory. And everything wasn't hunky dory. He turned them into Phyrexian horrors.
Yes.
but that was kind of the shtick. He's like, we got free healthcare in Phyrexia, but the healthcare consisted of like chopping them up and using their meat to make meat golems.
But it was necromancy, bleach. Which is technically still better than some places.
So,
you're not dead. Free. You're undead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not. I mean, would you want to be stitched together with chunks of your entire family, or like $40,000 in debt?
Yeah, right. Tough call.
I mean, I've tried one of those two. I won't tell you which one.
Yeah.
Wasn't great.
So, Urza and his ally Baron, at the Talarian Academy in Dominaria, went to great lengths to create a time machine in order to prevent the Thran from ever becoming Phyrexians. So he's like, if we could just go back and stop people from living down there, Yawgmoth will never have the people that he can convince, and everything will be fine. You know, we won't have any of this metallic horrors pouring in from another dimension. Problem.
That's interesting.
So
go
it was
back
in the
fix the like human rights violations before they occur. So then, yeah. so then you don't have a disenfranchised voter base for a interdimensional conservative to come through and turn people into meat robots.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Your country needs you to be a meat robot. So the caves underneath the town, and this is just like a fun little tidbit, were called the Caves of Koilos. It's a fun little tidbit because it's a land in Magic the Gathering for people who play the Magic the Gathering card game. People who listen to the last episode will remember me saying the word Caves of Koilos.
What's the acronym for that? Just like out loud?
Cock.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Nice.
I almost said cot because I was thinking Caverns of Time from World of Warcraft for some reason.
Oh. That's the way that Blizzard ties in all the old content into the new content.
Exactly.
Oh, there's a cave you can go in to go into the past.
Exactly.
So now you can play all the old content, and it's new content now.
Friggin', yeah. I don't want to get into Blizzard right now. We talk about them too much.
We do.
Diablo 2, though. Great game. Somebody wants to play with me? Message me on Discord. I'm running hardcore right now.
Since our last last episode, I've raised and killed two Diablo characters.
Hardcore characters, yeah.
Oh, I'm on my third. Ethan's still on his first, but
you're
I'm
like
only
a racehorse breeder. Jesus.
Okay, yeah. So Urza, and he has a friend named Baron. B-A-R-R-I-N. They want to make time travel happen. They go to this place called the Tolarian Academy in Dominaria, which was an academy Urza put together to bring together all the best and brightest of Dominaria.
Anime girls.
Straight up to like fight. It's like a wizard school. It's Hogwarts. It's anime like magic girl school.
Okay, good.
It is whatever you want it to be. But Urza brought them all together to fight the Phyrexian threat. So he was like, we know this is going to come at some point in the future. We know it's potentially a threat. So we're going to just train up all their best and brightest minds to be good planeswalkers. Good, not necessarily planeswalkers, but magickers, people who can fight off the Phyrexians. So okay. they're trying to make a time travel machine. But unfortunately, every chicken they send through their time travel machine would have its flesh melted and become horribly disfigured and die. So they can't get it to work.
They're using chickens as their... As they're like Soviet apes, basically, that they launched through time.
That's fully a Lore Boys canon, but yes, they're using they're using chickens to send through.
What are they again? The COC,
the COK,
the COK, which is the cock, which
cock,
is the male chickens that they're sending through. Yeah.
Okay.
They put their cock into a time machine. they even would try sending metal chickens through, like brass chickens and iron chickens. They'd all break down, rusting to dust as they travel the time. This is where the Lore Boys canon kind of falls because they weren't actually sending chickens through, but Lore Boys canon, they were sending chickens through. Whatever they were sending through, anything would break down once they put it into the time stream.
Okay.
So iron and brass doesn't work, but they want to keep trying things. Eventually, they do find one metal which would not rust, pure silver.
Well, naturally, that's the ultimate anti-magic metal.
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't just like start with that?
It kills werewolves because they wanted to kill some brass chickens. What's your problem, Pete? Huh?
That's very fine.
Are you on you on team brass chicken over here, huh?
I'm just saying.
Are they just taking those wind things off the people's roofs that have north
weather
vanes?
Weather vanes.
Yeah.
They're going through town.
What do you call it?
Wind things. I don't know what they are.
Dead of night, just like Urza and Baron, like. With like this like cart full of weather vanes, just like pushing through the streets of Dominaria, like
like spilling out of the sides.
Yeah,
silver one, a copper one.
So they realize that pure silver can survive time travel uniquely, I suppose. So they grab a heartstone from a dead Phyrexian spy, which I didn't get into, but it's a woman named Xantia was like an advisor to. Urza, and she turned out to be a spy. She ends up dying. They grab her heartstone because she was Phyrexian, so she was powered by one of these mana stones that powers constructs.
It's like their reactor, basically?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a magic stone. The might stone and the weak stone were just like very efficient reactors that they found in the ground, basically.
Okay.
The might stone and the weak stone, I've said it before, are cards in game. They just let you tap for colorless mana. Xantia is a character in the game. She's like Xantia double agent, I think.
Okay.
You play her. When you play her from your hand, you give her to another player. So you play it onto the battlefield and it instantly goes to somebody else's battlefield. And she has the rules text that says she can attack her owner, so the person who owns the card. So she can attack you or any planeswalkers you control. And anybody can activate her ability, which deals damage to the person who controls her and lets the person who activated it draw a card.
What activates the ability? Is it just using...
It's mana. So it's three mana of any color, and you can activate her ability. So what you do is you put her down on your battlefield. She instantly goes to someone else's battlefield, and then she's there. She can't attack you. So the reason why she's like unique and I guess better is because there's a lot of spells which will be like destroy an enemy's creature, or destroy all your enemy's creatures, or something like that. And like it won't work on her because it's not their enemy's creature. It's like they control her, but right, it's kind of cool. She's a double agent. So she's like, it's especially cool in like multiplayer games because you can play multiplayer games of Paper Magic.
And pass her around.
Yeah, just everyone has their own health pool and anybody can activate that ability. So you just give her to one player and anybody can just like hit that player and draw a card. You don't really do it to hit the player, but you just do it to draw the card because card draw is really, really good in card games. Go figure.
I was picturing in like Hearthstone how I'd use that. It's like if someone had a Sylvanas on the field and I already had a 5/5 out, you put her down and then kill both of your targets. So then now she has the...
Yeah.
Like it's all about passing her to the person in front of you, I guess.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Well, it's like when we talked about Jessica, we talked about Phage who... Yeah.
Yes,
can like kill a person as soon as she deals damage, or if it enters your battlefield from any method. So if like if you could get Phage's text added to Zancha's, you like mm-hmm. you could just instantly make a player lose the game because you just play it onto somebody else's battlefield, essentially.
Right. Magic is deep, man. It's cool, but I do not have the money to get into it. I feel like
nobody really has the money to get into it. They're all lying to themselves.
So yeah, I could get rid of my other things I'm lying about myself to bring in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Couldn't we all? So they grab the Hearthstone out of this woman's automaton Zancha, who had been spying on Urza for some time, and a large person's worth of pure silver. They create their construct.
An they automaton. Make their silver chicken to send to the future and then yeah, back to the past.
Their giant silver chicken, yeah.
Yeah.
They create an automaton capable of traveling time and saving Dominaria. Right? Just send it back in time, solve all the problems. Episode over. Easy, easy peasy, right?
Yeah.
Or is this one of them time travels where it's solving the problem prevents them from trying to solve the problem sort of loop shit where it's just like, well, if there weren't any zombie robots, if there weren't any Phyrexians, we never would have invented time machine, meaning we cancel out our time machine.
It's not that kind of time travel, but it'll come with its own for sure. So before getting sent back, they needed to make sure that their construct was up to snuff. Now that he could walk and talk, Urza and Baron thought it important to teach him some of the ways of the world. Things like algebra, English lit, home economics, you know,
all the useful classes.
Exactly. The staples of a well-rounded individual.
Drama, dance, woodworking.
So our probe was headed to high school.
Yeah.
conveniently, we've established that the Talarian Academy was a high school for wizards.
Filled with anime girls.
Exactly. So, and at least one anime boy.
It's the robot.
But don't worry, all the anime girls are like 700 years old because of lore. So,
oh yeah, don't look at them like
for lore. That's the lore. If you've actually read the, like, 700 years old, okay, it's not weird. So, Urza entrusted the probe's tutelage to a young student known as Teferi.
Okay,
we've talked about Teferi before, especially when we were talking about closing the rifts in Dominaria that came up after a certain couple time catastrophes.
I remember the name actually. It's like way back in the dead little vestiges of my brain. But I like when you said that, it was just like, it had like two neurons fired off when you said it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Those are still there.
Yes. They did the little smallest handshake.
Yeah, those two little neurons. Like, I got you.
the two people left in like a life raft, just like adrift at sea, just like wakes up briefly when a seagull pecks him in the head.
One neuron named Tef and one neuron named Airy. So Teferi had intense magical potential. He'd been brought to the academy to train to defend against the Phyrexian invasion.
Okay.
He somewhat reluctantly took the construct under his wing. After all, he had come here to whip metallic cores, not babysit. He gave the probe a name after getting understandably tired of just calling him Construct, Probe, whatever, metal guy.
Sputnik.
So he's the first person to name this construct, and he names him Artie McShovelhead. Sorry. I added the Mick. It's Artie Shovelhead.
No way.
So that's this episode, guys. We're talking about Artie Shovelhead.
I love the conversation where Urza would just like, okay, cool, you need to babysit this, from what we've established, giant silver chicken. Don't give it a name. Don't get attached to it, because we need to send it into the past, and it might dissolve.
And he calls him Artie Shovelhead, and he kind of resents the fact that he has to babysit him.
It sounds like whenever you let your kid name a pet or something like that.
Very much was that, and Urza was very much the absent father that was just like, sure, you name him. I don't care. He's like, just goes back to work, you know? Like, I'm going to be in the den drinking whiskey. Don't bother me. I got you a dog. Leave me alone. Go play with
the dog. Just clean up after it.
Yeah. There was, of course, a girl in this story following a trio of friends going to wizard school.
Ooh.
Joyra was her name.
Okay.
She was slightly older than Teferi, and she took an honest liking to Artie right off the bat, giving him the slightly better name Karn, an old Thran word, meaning mighty.
Oh, I've heard this before.
Yeah, so Karn is somebody that we have talked about on episodes before. Karn is the name of the card. Only Teferi called him Artie Shovelhead.
He is he features at some point in the Mirari episodes with Jessica, doesn't he?
He features in the Mirari episodes. He also features in the Gatewatch periodically, but not in any sense that we've talked about, because since we did those episodes, the set War of the Spark was released, and that featured Karn very heavily helping the Gatewatch.
Okay.
He ends up retreating through the Blind Eternities for a long time, but we're not going to get into that today. We're going to stop like just before War of the Spark, because this ran kind of long, and just getting into like the extra little bit where they're clearly still building off of didn't feel worth it to me.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we're doing high school, and we're going to stop at the yearbook and follow off after that.
We're going to do like the 5-year reunion, just not the 10-year reunion.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, the shitty reunion where literally nothing has changed.
Exactly.
Yeah. What have you been up to? Oh, I have a part-time job. I'm still a giant silver chicken.
So the three would eventually become fast friends, Teferi, Joyra, and Karn. I lost my place. They all settled into a peaceful, idyllic lifestyle, easily ignoring the looming threat of war and any potential time travel missions.
Well, that's no good. Lovely. I told you not to name them. I fucking told you. And now my time traveling war robot's a farmer. Thank you.
Well, of course, Xantia, whose Hearthstone even now powered Karn, wasn't the only sleeper agent working for Yawgmoth on behalf of the Phyrexians.
Oh, yeah. Well, it would make sense to have more than one spy.
Yeah.
Who else is?
So while the kids did play, a Phyrexian was Steve Buscemi-ing through the Tolarian Academy themselves.
Oh, like,
how do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah.
It's like a horrible, monstrous automaton. Like,
boom, man. There's your art right there. Yeah. It's on the on the shirt instead of music band, it's gonna say just like Planes Walker.
Magic man.
Yeah.
So one faithful day, Joyra, unfortunately, the woman, spills the beans. You know, women, they just can't keep secrets, huh?
What do you mean, unfortunately, the woman? Like, it's unfortunate that she is a woman?
No, because we've talked about this on past episodes, where how the old writing of, at least to me anyway, the old writing of Magic the Gathering, and this is like a book series, really resonates with misogyny. Like, oh, of course it was the woman that spilled the beans, you know?
During the Jessica episodes, the women fuck up constantly, and then, what's his name, the barbarian guy that's in that? Kamal is just like depressed and like fedoras his way through life, basically.
Well, he like there's one point where it's like three of the most powerful women on the planet when Jessica is sage at this point. Yeah. There's like a demigoddess and another super powerful woman, the like an angel lady of devastation. And Kamal just shows up. And he's like, oh no, I killed all three women. And then they become Corona, the false goddess. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So that's why I say unfortunately, because it's like, oh, the woman had to be the one to spill the beans. Women just can't keep a secret, eh?
Thank God we had that episode 6 months ago and not a month ago, because the Corona jokes
were
way longer than that. That was during I wasn't on some of those episodes.
It was in Mexico. It was when I was in Mexico.
It was last summer. It wasn't that long ago, Peter. was last summer.
Six, seven, eight months ago.
Time flies when you're home alone all the time.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So Dreyer would spill the beans to this young spy named Carrick that the plan was to send Karn back in time to stop the Phyrexians before it even happened. So they could probably all relax and stop studying so hard, right? Like,
were they just like joshing, or do they have like a romantic thing where he's just like, yes, tell me your secrets, and like leans sideways and part of his face slides off and then he readjusts.
Yeah.
He's obviously like a meat robot.
Yeah. He goes to readjust and his hand falls off and he puts his hand back on really quickly.
Yeah, it's like Weekend at Bernie's, but it's the parts of his body that he's constantly trying to readjust.
Let's say both. Let's say they fucked and also that.
Okay, cool.
So
his penis discreetly fell off at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And oh that is a thing from my homeland. it is a courting ritual that we do back home. Do you not do this here? I do love the idea that Phyrexians are just French people. No, keep those horrible monsters out of our plane. Thank you very much.
Smelly, drink wine.
They smoke cigarettes out of long straws.
Yeah.
How do you do, fellow kids?
So this up-and-coming Carrick immediately took the news back to Yawgmoth, who knew one thing. If you're facing a time-traveling enemy, there's no time to waste. Phyrexia. Thank you. Thank you. That joke was written down.
Sorry, both those neurons that you heated up earlier are back in business, baby.
Yeah. Ethan said it and then looked at us and his eyebrows raised over his hairline. Like,
I broke my forehead.
Tossed off his Fred Durst cap and everything.
My eyebrows lifted my cap up a whole 2 inches. Like, So Phyrexia would act. They'd attack Dominaria. They amassed forces, a full invasion, a Phyrexian invasion, but not the Phyrexian invasion that we know and love.
Okay.
Do we love it?
Yeah, well, it depends who you're talking to, I guess. But, Jamie, we said we're not going to get political on this episode. Some people like drone striking civilians. What can I say? Like, come on. We're not getting political, okay?
Whether they're outside or in hospitals, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
It's none of my business.
It wasn't their business being there in their own country. So Phyrexia invades Dominaria for the first time, for the not real time, and we'll find out why it's not the real Phyrexian invasion. They amass their forces and attack in a single thrust the Talarian Academy. They know this is where Urza is, kind of like is where Karn is, the focus of the time travel plan. So hordes of horrific metal beasts pour through open rifts opened by Yawgmoth and into the plain. Despite housing the sharpest wizarding minds Dominaria had to offer, the Academy was not prepared for the attack, and the horrors quickly overwhelmed them. Teferi and Joyra, Karn's only friends, would fall in the defense, and the Academy itself would be destroyed, reduced to rubble.
Dang.
So we have a robot designed for a singular purpose, whose only friends have been killed.
Okay.
And one of those friends was really a bully who called him Artie Shovelhead for a long time.
Yeah, I mean,
Joyra would fall to Carrick himself, showing back up to rub the betrayal in her face. Not only did she spill the beans, she died to the guy she spilled the beans to, despite being a pretty competent wizard herself.
Sounds messy, beans and blood everywhere.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Bloody beans.
We've established this already. Competent wizard, but woman. Fatal flaw. Boom.
Karn, feeling desperate. His only friends have died. He's only been alive for a couple years now. Also realizing that they were fighting a losing battle, retreated to Urza. There was no more time for calculations. If Urza was going to send him back in time, it had to be now.
Okay.
Urza and Baron agreed.
Which in its own way is kind of punny.
Well, I had the pun set up, Peter. I was about to say it.
Sorry.
Urza and Baron agreed there was no better time for time travel.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was gonna say, it's just like, you got to send me back. Well, no time like the present.
The present.
Oh, my God.
Also very good. So they activate the time machine that they had, strapping our hero Artie Shovelface in and sending him spiraling back to only a few days before all this happened, before the secret was out. So the plan was send him back, tell Joyra, hey, you remember that super top secret plan that we were working on? Maybe I'll go fucking spill the beans to your boyfriend. Hmm? It's going to be messy when he comes back to kill you and there's beans of blood everywhere. You're going to feel real stupid about it, okay?
Covered in beans at your funeral. Yeah. God damn it.
You've seen egg on your face. Now imagine beans on your face, okay?
Oh, yeah. I would love just to continue on with like the... Just like the joke of men versus women in the Magic the Gathering writing of it's just like, okay, you got to go, this mouthy bitch, you got to go back, you either got to convince her to keep her mouth shut or you got to kill her. I understand she's your best friend, but you got to do it.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the two. We know she's not going to be able to keep a secret. She's a woman. Come on.
Yeah, it's impossible. Just got to kill her.
So the time machine.
I love how he's going back in time now to stop something from a zombie robot agent. It's just like, okay, you're going to see him. Honestly, hindsight 2020, seems obvious that the guy with the rotting skin and the metal skeleton was the double agent.
But... yeah, right. Yeah. Just like this horrible apparition, like literally a scarecrow with a human's face like sewed onto it.
Yeah, like stretched over. Yeah.
So the time machine, upon arrival, showed that messing with the fundamental laws of the universe is no trivial affair. With a great shudder and heave, the time machine arrived, but quickly deteriorated. It suffered catastrophic failure, creating what was known as the temporal disaster, destroying the Talarian Academy, and killing hundreds of students and teachers.
Oops.
Yeah, right? So like, oh, I gotta save the academy. You gotta send me back in time, boss. Like, you know what? You know what, kid? You're ready. You're going back. And just like, upon arrival, just like detonates like a neutron bomb and just destroys the entire academy.
We gotta kill everybody 4 days earlier to make sure it's not the robots that do it.
So, if anyone's gonna kill my people, it's gonna be me, damn it. That's Urza right before sending Karn back in time.
but the explosion made it so he couldn't go back in time and do the explosion. So we know that it's like, it's timelines, right?
It's not... it's no not what. That thick. There's no paradoxes in time travel in okay. Magic the Gathering.
It just Joyra kept her mouth shut because she was atomized. So,
yeah. Presumably,
that's a success.
Yeah.
I like how you say atomized too, because there's like Adam and Eve, and then atomized is like the first male is the thing that destroyed her. But like, there's kind of a double joke there, I thought.
Yeah, that's totally what I was going for.
That's a stretch, Jamie. You're trying to hit the word count.
Thanks
more than
for explaining
right
my joke, James.
Atomized, destroyed by men, and also turned into atoms.
Yeah. Get it? On my 4,000 word paper.
Yeah. Get it? Question mark? Circle question mark?
Yeah. The circle question mark counts as a word, right, Professor? So Teferi and Joyra, Karn's only friends, were within the academy at the time.
Yep.
So not only did he not save them, he actually changed the timeline, so he killed them. They were lost to Karn once more. Depressed, Karn left Talaria and puttered around with Urza and Baron for a time, venturing about on their ship, the Weatherlight, to deal with incoming threats to Dominaria. So he's like Talaria, the Talarian Academy is ruined, but Phyrexia didn't invade. So that's why I say this wasn't the Phyrexian invasion, because he did change the timeline. Nobody gave them the information, Yawgmoth, the information that he had to invade now, or otherwise, like once you have time travel, it's like there was like a really old meme or internet image that floated around for a long time. It was a guy with a sign that said, "What do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? It's irrelevant."
Right. Okay.
Because once you've unlocked the secrets of time travel, it's irrelevant. So if Yawgmoth knew, he would act instantly, right? There's no better time than the present, as Peter said.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome. So Karn is back with Urza, with Baron, and they're just like doing the day-to-day subduing of the Phyrexians, you know, rooting out spies, stopping minor incursions, fighting off double agents. They don't trust anyone. Living their lives. They weren't willing to risk sending Karn on time-traveling ventures after seeing the devastation at the academy. They said, wow, that really did a number on Dominaria.
They didn't consider just doing it outside once just to see?
Well, because it created something called the temporal disaster, which spawned a bunch of rifts all over Dominaria, which is something that I think we've at least mentioned it on other episodes. I don't know if I've ever properly gotten into all the rifts that get spawned, but it could take. Jessica was known because she gives up her spark at the end of it all to close a rift. So these temporal rifts, these magic rifts, are like serious business, and he ended up spawning a bunch, and that's what destroyed Teleria.
Okay.
So like, that's kind of fucked up that that stuff happens, you know?
The way we left that was that only a planeswalker's spark could close one of these rifts.
Once they're big enough, yeah. So like, in theory, if they're small enough, you can kind of deal with them, but once they grow out of control, it gets untenable. Okay. Also, there was a ton of planeswalkers potential planeswalkers who died at Teleria when the academy got destroyed. So maybe their sparks just inherently closed those rifts and, you know, like sparked off or whatever. But like,
so every time, every time a neckbeard gets like a wife and like a real job, doesn't have time for magic anymore, and they sell all their cards and they retire, a rift closes, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Every time a bell rings, a neckbeard gets his wings. So 20 years would pass from the devastation. I said 5-year reunion. I actually probably meant 20-year reunion, because 20 years would pass with them traveling the plane, shutting rifts and writing the damage the disaster caused. But they did eventually accept that the Talarian Academy itself may have been a good idea. Having a place for like all the best and brightest minds come and to train them up, because they still knew that Phyrexia was a threat. Karn had seen it himself. Like, Karn saw the invasion. He's the one who traveled in time, right?
Yeah.
So if sending Karn time traveling strapped to a nuke wasn't itself a good idea, that was. So they decide
maybe
to do it.
Dynamite next time. A little bit more modest.
Yeah, that's it. We'll work our way up back to the neutron bomb. So they return to the site. They decide to build it on the site of the old Talarian Academy. And they set to work clearing rubble. Much to all of their surprise and Karn's delight, they find Joyra trapped in the rubble. She had survived 20 years trapped underneath it.
Oh.
So, early on after the disaster, Joyra had managed to clear herself some space where she was trapped. So she's basically, she was like in the basement at the time, you know, fighting the basement Phyrexians. and
they're the worst.
The whole thing collapses on top of her, but she's in like a room and she has like some space. And she finds a pool of water collecting in one corner. What is the first thing you did the last time you were trapped under a huge building's worth of rubble?
Establish a pee corner, and you just start peeing right away, because you gotta have a corner. Yeah.
Okay. Not what I was thinking. Peter, how about you?
I had a different answer. I was going to check if the water was potable, but honestly, the establishing just a waste corner in general is a really good fucking idea.
Okay. Well, you're both wrong, because it's not determined a waste corner, and it's pronounced potable. But Joyra,
if you can drink it, then you put it in a pot, so it's pot.
Potable. So the first thing Joyra did was see if the water was potable, and the way she did that was
That's a half point.
By drinking it.
If it's not potable, she's got to find that waste corner quick.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah.
So that's why I get that first. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Pee corner's turned into the puke corner. We can establish a pee corner later.
All right. You know what? I'm on board. I think she should have probably done her pee corner first, but maybe she did and it just didn't mention it. Kind of like how you never see characters in movies go to the bathroom. It's just like it's assumed they do, but we don't need to see it. So
that's true. Yeah.
I watched Pulp Fiction.
It's assumed she found the pee corner, but we don't need to mention it because it's obvious.
Right.
So she finds this pool of water in the corner and she decides to drink it. Turns out,
was it magic sludge?
It was magic sludge, basically. The water had been affected by the temporal rifts, which had destroyed the academy. The water had become changed, and drinking it would change Joyra. Drinking the water slowed Joyra's aging progress to a near standstill. I'm sorry, I really struggled with that sentence.
It's progress. So okay. You're right.
It's magic coma water.
Yeah, exactly.
A coma doesn't really make your age stand still, but it puts you out for 20 years.
Yeah. I really like the fact that we're still carrying on kind of weirder aspects of Magic the Gathering, where it's like, yeah, sure, she was going to spill the beans, but thankfully, after a man fucked everything up, she stayed young and hot, thanks to Matt. Yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, if they found her and she was over 30, they probably would have just fucking left her there.
Yeah, put the rock back on to where they just undug her. We'll let this play out.
So basically, she becomes immune to aging. She's going to be young and hot forever, Pete.
Fuck yeah, dude.
With the two reunited, Joyra had another surprise for Karn. Teferi had remained alive as well, though he was trapped in an actual temporal bubble all this time. So he's in like a the last thing he saw was the Talarian Academy crumbling above him, and he like put himself in a bubble, and he's still there, like all, constantly scared, you know.
Well, he's still young and hot too, though, right?
He's still young and hot because he actually hasn't aged at all. Joyra has just aged at like a fraction of the speed.
Okay,
but she's been alive and conscious throughout the whole thing. Teferi is like the real. There. Yeah, Teferi is like the real Weekend at Bernie's at this point, where they can kind of like dress him up in weird shirts, and he's just like stuck there, like.
Oh, okay, yeah. She's been using him as like a drying rack for laundry for like the past 30 years.
Yeah. So the two work together. They manage to free him from the bubble. I don't know how you pop a temporal bubble, but. They managed
yeah,
to do it.
Does he age all at once Silver. In that instance if you like let the air come in or
no, he doesn't. He doesn't because he specifically is like devastated that he lost friends in that time and he goes Teferi, it's noted that he goes into like a depression because he's like, I lost 20 years. Like where I was and like everybody I knew is 20 years older now and I'm still here the same thing kind of thing. And we didn't fucking hear Jorah complaining, did we?
Well,
he was conscious and trapped under a fucking mountain of rubble the whole time. Like, and fucking Teferi like, oh, boo-hoo. I had to, like, blink, and then I'm, like, back here. But, like, everyone's older. Ooh, that sucks.
I wanted to waste this past 20 years on my own terms.
Yeah, exactly. Joyra lost the same 20 years. Teferi fucking whatever.
Suck it up.
All my friends went to college, and I stayed here and worked at wherever, and now they have different experiences than I do.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know what, Jamie? A little too relatable. Okay, someone who dropped out of university after his first year. Okay, a little on the nose there. So Urza at this time, the kids are like, yeah, we found each other. We're friends again. Woohoo! It's only been 20 years. No problem. And Karn's like, I don't fucking age. I don't care. But Urza's like, okay, the kids are doing their thing. That's nice. He kind of puts his silver golem time traveling project back on the back burner.
Probably for the best.
He'd seen the devastation that it can wrought, and he's like, well, that's probably not worth it. But he's also like very much the absentee father, like we'd said before, who's like buys his kid a puppy and is like, I'm going to the den to drink whiskey, play with a puppy. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to go work on other stuff. You're whatever. Do whatever you want. And Karn is like, at best at this point, 21 years old, maybe 22. So Karn at least still wanted to do his part. He continues on expeditions to help Phyrexia. Urza developed a skyship at this point called the Weatherlight, which is like a flying like Zeppelin-esque kind of thing that he can use to battle Phyrexian incursions rather quickly. So Karn's kind of on that, and he's like not the captain, but he's like part of the crew. You know, he's like, yeah, wherever Phyrexia shows up, we show up too. The three of them, they also worked on something called the Mana Rig. It's a massive platform designed to generate power stones and Thran metal, a type of durable ultralight metal. So okay, just cool. It's like the like an oil rig, but it produces like magic rocks. We already said magic rocks, right? Yeah, we said the same kind of magic rocks. So you don't have to drink again at home if you don't want to, but
we recommend it. But you don't
you
have
can
to.
If you do want to. And the stuff called Thran metal, which is just like, I don't know, Damascus steel, you know, like it's an ancient technology that's been lost.
It's the coolest metal that we forgot how to make or some shit.
Well, we don't have proof of how it was made. So we're like, it's probably folded steel, but there's no way to prove that it's folded steel. So maybe it's like something much cooler than folded steel, but probably just folded steel because it kind of lines up with historical expectations for the time. Eventually, though, they're all working on the mana rig, and Urza would call Karn back. Joyra would remain in her homeland with Teferi to run the mana rig. So Karn's lost his friends again. He's like, he's got to go explore with Dad, and you know, his friends are off fiddling around on the mana rig.
They all got to trade, basically, and have like full-time jobs now. They can't hang out.
Yeah, exactly. So Karn begins to feel depressed. No friends. No purpose. He's like the Rick and Morty robot that just delivers butter.
Oh, yeah.
Except his purpose is time travel, and he's not allowed to do that anymore. So,
I like how he created this nigh indestructible time traveling robot, but it still ended up with depression.
It just goes to show you, it comes for anyone. You know?
Yeah.
doesn't matter if you, it doesn't matter if you're a time traveling nigh indestructible robot or just like, you know, Jeffrey.
Just a regular guy.
Maybe creators make things and they're like,
oh yeah.
Maybe there's a little depression there, you know, and he's passing it on.
I mean, maybe from what I read, Urza is like all ego. And like he's the good guy for sure, but like super ego at the same time. Like super like, and because we're about to get into the perfect example of why that is. Okay. Karn's starting to feel depressed. He's sulking. He has no purpose. So between Ventures on the Weatherlight, when they're like fighting for Exians, he doesn't like notice it so much. Like real depression, right?
Yeah. No passion left in him.
Yeah.
So Baron,
when you're fighting zombies and depressed, you don't notice you're depressed so much.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you're busy. Just, like, you're keeping busy, you know?
Yeah. It's like sinew and blood. Like, yeah, you just don't notice it so much.
Hose him off after, right?
I mean, for sure. There's a great thing that happens to him much later on, which I don't get into, but he gets put in this like drum with like, and I didn't get into it. I didn't look it up, but it was like, cause it was at the end of my script, but I really wanted to. He gets put into a drum, a rotating drum full of infinitely spawning goblins, and he just crushes the goblins. That's like his purpose. He makes like goblin pulp, and he has to be rescued from it because he's like stuck in this drum where he's just spinning and crushing goblins. I don't...
That sounds like something that someone would make in a custom Minecraft server so they can get the goblin parts for their fucking house or whatever.
Fuck up to my Minecraft tutorial. This is how you can make a drum that spawns goblins with an iron golem that will crush them all and produce goblin pulp for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Baron, Urza's friend, is the one who became concerned with Karn. He's like, hey, dude, your kid is like hella depressed, man. Like, all he does is go sit at the front of the ship and just like stare out at nothing all day. Kid like that, you know what I mean? He should be like drawing dicks in notebooks or something like that.
It's a good thing you blew up the school because I'd be concerned with him.
Yeah, thank God we don't have to worry about that. Are you sure? Are you sure Karn didn't do that? Like, no, but he asks Urza, "Hey man, could you do something for Karn?" So Urza, seeing that Karn missed his friends, did what any responsible parent would do. It's really like Karn is like a kid that has to move constantly because of his dad's job.
Oh, he's like a military kid.
And so he just like he can't develop those roots, you know. So Urza, seeing that Karn missed his friends, did what any responsible parent would do. He put a mental cap on Urza's memories, causing him to forget anything from more than 20 years ago. So Karn can now only remember a 20-year span of life. Anything greater than that in either direction is lost to him.
Would he forget to ride a bike, in that case?
Yeah.
Okay.
So unless he rode a bike in the last 20 years.
Okay. So you guys... 1,000-year life, remember everything, or you can live forever, and you can only remember 20 years at a time.
You know what? It's probably a mercy. If you're living for 1,000 years, it's probably a mercy to not remember 900 years ago when you like fell in love and you know your first friends and everything. Like, it's probably way better. If we're gonna say like long periods of life, I'm gonna say it's way better to do 20 years. So I'm still going. I know we've done this question a few times. I'm still going immortal life. I'm still going. I think you're doing me a favor by giving me the option of saying only a 20-year memory.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd take the 20-year blocks as well. Easy.
The way Karn's memory works too is if it was me and you, we were both immortal and we both had I had a 20-year memory. As long as we saw each other every 20 years, I would remember who you were. Because I saw you within that 20 years or whatever.
Right. But like, imagine now your life scales on for 100,000 years and you only remember 20. Like that drop in the bucket becomes smaller and smaller and smaller the longer you live. Yeah.
So small. Yeah. I mean, 100,000 years is such an incomprehensible. And I have this discussion like fairly often because I read a lot of fantasy. And a super common trope in fantasy is like, oh, you know, this kingdom has stood for 2,000 years or something like that. And it's a super common trope in fantasy of people to say 1,000 years when 1,000 years is longer than anything. Like 1,000 years is longer than anything has lasted except for like the Catholic, like, except for like religion. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's
like no kingdom, no dynasty, no nothing, no war has lasted that long. We're saying like Dominaria and Phyrexia were at war for 4,000 years. That is a stupid number. Nothing lasts that long. like, you know how much technology changes in that much time? It just, it doesn't make any sense. About 100,000 years? That's like half, like the Egyptian civilization, the Babylonian civilization, cradle life was like 10, 12,000 years ago. Yeah. Like it's 10 times that. Like,
it's crazy.
Yeah, evolution.
You wouldn't even keep evolving. People would evolve past you.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't evolve because you're outside the reproductive loop.
I have to show you how my dog's sitting because it's not normal. Can you tell which part's her head?
Oh yeah. No, she's right side up. I can see.
It's dumb.
She's weird though. She's sideways. She's rotated 90 degrees. Somebody rotated that dog 90 degrees.
She's like sleeping. Because like with the camera angle, it's not great, but she's like sleeping almost like this, you know?
Yeah. Fully 90 degrees. Fully
90 degrees, yeah.
If she was on a wall or if that chair tipped over to the side, she would look just as normal.
Yeah, exactly. She's sleeping like she normally does, husky ball on the ground, but like 90 degrees on the back of a chair. So her side is there and she's just perpendicular to the ground. Anyways.
So the reason why we asked the 100,000 year question is because Karn could only remember 20 years. So there was one thing that Karn never wished to forget. And every night he would hold a picture of Joyra and repeat the mantra, "Joyra is my friend."
Oh, that's cute.
So we go to bed every single night because he's like, "Dad, I miss my friends." And his dad was like, "Well, I'm going to fucking make you forget your friends then, you little whatever." And he was like, "Shut up, Dad. I don't want to forget my friend Joyra." And he just, every night he would look at a picture of her and he would say like, "Joyra is my friend."
Every night, by the way, you two, I go, "Ethan is my friend. Peter is my friend. Good night." And I fall asleep.
Oh shit, dude! Are you capable of living 100,000 years, but you have a limited 20-year memory?
Did you blow up my
school? No. I definitely have a shorter memory than normal. Like, I don't remember the beginning of the episode, but I don't live that long.
So Urza then decided that all the junk he'd collected over the years, kind of including Karn, what he'd call the legacy. And this is what he called himself. So this is why I was saying, like, he's definitely the good guy, but there's definitely some ego in there because, like, all his inventions, he's like, "This is the legacy, not my legacy. This is capital T-H-E legacy.
Okay.
Like, this is the legacy."
And nobody decided to tell him, it's like, "You know, Urza, you can get rid of these newspapers. They're technically only good once."
Well, maybe twice if you count the one that was there on the day you were born, but you were born in year zero, so I don't know if the newspaper was running then.
There is like, no year zero.
There is
in
now.
This world, there in this is. World, there James. Is.
Frick.
So he's like, "I got this assortment of inventions. I have a son, kind of. He's a robot, but I guess you could kind of call him
invention,
my son.
Invention, son, haven't really decided yet. Depends on how I'm feeling."
Well, yeah, I have a legacy, and I have a son / invention. What am I going to do? I'm going to decide that these inventions need a more human component leading them. Like I said earlier, Urza was kind of like a very robotic himself at a lot of points. He became like one of the most powerful planeswalkers alive and swapped out most of his body parts. For robot parts, his eyes at some point become the Might Stone and the Weak Stone. He just like puts them in his eyes and they're like nuclear reactors in his head. So he's like, "You know what?
Then he got that tumor.
I'm a robot. I'm not fit to lead robots. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to interfere in human bloodlines to create the perfect hero." So that's what he does. He takes a brief stint in eugenics.
Oh no.
It's really like good guy with an asterisk at this point. but he does produce at least one good person. So the culmination of this project is the Capacian bloodline, or Capacian, was put under Karn's care. So he's like, "I created this perfect bloodline of humans. You look after him." And he like fucks off again.
Here's my second family. Deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine you got like a deadbeat dad who leaves, starts a second family, and then is like, "No, I'm gonna ditch these guys too. Can you look after them?"
You're kind of your own stepbrother and stepfather to these people.
I mean, watched that movie.
Pornhub.com. Pornhubcats.com.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Not anymore. But...
Yeah, $17 well spent. Who cares?
Karn has purpose once more. He's protecting the Weatherlight's newest deckhand, Gerard Capation or Capation. During his stewardship, the legacy, capital T, the legacy, and it says this, like, the legacy was stolen, but it's like, how do you steal, like, a giant airship, every single invention he's created, a living automaton, but the legacy was stolen, so a good chunk of magic items were stolen by one of Gerard's adoptive brothers. It seems Gerard Capation himself was adopted, which makes it, like, weirder. He's like, what? Karn's adopt, like, because Karn was put in charge of him, and I guess his parents died, and then he got adopted by a human family because Karn can't be the head of a family because he's an automaton and whatever, you know. He didn't become kind of dad,
like, unfit to parent because you don't have a beating heart and can travel through time or some shit.
What, because you were never a kid and don't understand the difficulties of puberty, you can't be a parent? Come on, that can't be real. So during his stewardship, the legacy was stolen. Karn's like, well, you fucking lost the legacy, kid. I guess I'll go get it back. In the process of fighting with the thief, he would accidentally kill an innocent bystander. Karn's a wizard. He's not a planeswalker. So he can cast magic, but he can't travel to planes, basically.
Okay, he's a wizard robot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he accidentally kills an innocent bystander while casting his magic. And something called the touchstone would touch him and freeze him in place and time. Kind of like Teferi, but just not in a bubble, just himself. The bubble is Karn, if you will.
Okay.
He's eventually rescued again by the captain of the Weatherlight, Sisse. He's brought out of stasis with the memory of killing the innocent bystander fresh as his mind. So it's like you're Teferi, but rather than like, oh shit, I'm being attacked and the world is crumbling around me, it's, I just killed an innocent person. And you just like snap out of it and you're like, and they're like, hey, things have changed. Like the world has moved on or whatever. And you're like, I vividly remember killing someone innocent just a moment ago. So he was horrified. He took a vow of pacifism, greatly reducing his ability to be a hugely powerful killing machine, which he was pretty good at before the vow of pacifism. So for many years, Karn held true to that vow. He worked instead to improve the Weatherlight, sophisticating its systems and bolstering its abilities. He's like, you know what? I'm still a pretty smart robot. I could probably just like make your ship better at killing. Then it's not me killing people.
It's
me enabling people. Yeah, exactly.
Use guns.
Yeah, Karn becomes the NRA very briefly.
Okay, there we go.
Like, no, I don't kill people, okay? The guns I sell kill people, sure.
I technically never even held one, if you think about it.
He technically has definitely been a gun, though. So
he's a hobbyist now.
He's been a gun? Is there a card with him just Transformers, like, looks like a gun?
Oh, like Megatron from the 80s?
Yeah. Straight up, I wield the power of gun. I cast the gun spell. He was quite the wizard in his time.
Tap one bullet and your civil liberties.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to tap. You need to tap two amendments to get your second amendment, and then you can cast a gun.
Wingardium Leviosa. M5 full automatic, bitch. So, of course, eventually he'd realize the true invasion would come. So Phyrexia does
invade. That's true.
Phyrexian invasion is a thing. It was a set. It was two sets at least. When the invasion, capital I, would come, Karn would be conflicted. He'd realize that in order to protect the people he cared about, you'd have to do what is necessary. To do what is necessary, you can't have some wussy-ass vow of pacifism in the middle of a war. You know,
take this airship to the nearest school. I've got something to take care of. He can only blow up inside schools.
Yeah. Somebody get me to a neutron bomb. I got a school to take care of. So
the dog just tried to get up from her like sideways up position and just fell right the fuck over. I'm sorry, guys. I'm talking about it too much. It's very entertaining to me.
It's very cute. I just feel like that we can see it, but the listeners at home can't see it.
Dog fell over. Very cute.
Imagine cute dog.
At home? for listeners at home, dog fell over. Very cute. So he's kind of like, he's conflicted. He's like, oh, Phyrexia is invading. I want to fight, but I took a vow of pacifism. And he's like standing there, and he's like, there's one of like the main figures from the Phyrexian invasion is standing there facing him. And he's like, oh, I could kill you, but I'm not going to do it. Blah, blah, blah. He's just standing there getting wailed on, but he's made out of pure silver, so it's not so easy to wail on him. And eventually someone just like hits him in the head with like a pickaxe. And so before he can come to grips with the moral conundrum, he takes a whack to the Chrome Dome, which would undo the memory limit that Urza had placed on him.
It was a werewolf tip spear.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing capable of being pure silver. Gets through his defenses and just like implants memories of being a werewolf and then also his old real memories in his brain. So memories of fighting alongside Jorah and Teferi against the Phyrexians the first time, which like again, he's the only one who remembers the first time that Phyrexia invaded, which when I say first, it's not really first because it never really happened.
Yeah, because he's the only one who did the full loop.
Basically. He's the only one who broke the time stream. So he's the only one who's seen the might of Phyrexia invading before Phyrexia invaded this time. So it breaks the limiter. He remembers that. And he's like, oh, no, wait. To kill these guys, you have to hit them. And then he's like, just hits the guy like four times. Like, bah, 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 bah. And like, I think Gerard is there as well. Gerard Capetian, the subject of Urza's eugenics program, is the main character in the Weatherlight novel series.
Okay.
Which like details all this in book form, I guess. The stories are from Wizards of the Coast. They come with the card sets or whatever, but Wizards of the Coast used to publish books with each release. So they'd get writers like R.A. Salvatore, who writes Dritz Duwerden, which is a very famous series, does the same thing for, or did the same thing for a long time for Dungeons and Dragons, which is also owned by Wizards of the Coast.
To, like, he would just contextualize some of the characters or whatever.
Yeah, it would just be like a notable story in the setting. So then you read the book. Yeah, exactly. For add lore, which we might be a fan of here, huh?
I'm going to invest in three guys, and don't worry, it'll all pay off.
It'll all work out in the end.
Don't do it.
Send money, because I'm out of money.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
So Karn gets his memory back. He realizes, okay, Phyrexian horrors are not people, so I can kill them. No problem. Despite the willingness he ends up fighting back. He ends up killing that main figure in the invasion, but it's still not his main role. He's still like much more passive than he was before. He continues to work on the Weatherlight primarily. That's like his main function is like Weatherlight technician and upgrade specialist.
Okay.
He eventually advances it so much that it develops its own consciousness. So the Weatherlight, the ship that they've been flying on all these years, becomes a machine, a construct, just like Karn. He'd created a soul to mirror his mirror body. To his joy, and despite the dire circumstances,
does he marry
Karn? Karn had finally found someone who could understand him completely. But like
himself.
Most happy things in Karn's life, wasn't meant to be.
Oh no!
The Weatherlight itself would be destroyed in one of the final battles against Yawgmoth, marking one more tragedy which would befall him. So the Weatherlight was like, I got Yawg. I know I've only been a ship for 2 days now, but I got Yawgmoth, the most powerful evil sorcerer in existence, and just like flew at him, tried to kill him, tried to kamikaze him, and it didn't work. But Karn has to watch another one of his friends die, even though he's watched his two best friends die twice now. And they're still his two best friends and alive. So starts to fuck with a guy after a certain amount of time, right?
Yeah, especially because his dad doesn't want to talk to him, and then he had to like sire or take care of his adoptive step family and shit. It's just like,
at least he got a puppy, right? In Ethan's metaphor, at least he got a puppy.
No, he is the puppy in Ethan's metaphor. Teferi was actually the kid who got the puppy.
Oh, sorry,
because he got to name it Artie Shovelface. So it wasn't even like Urza wasn't even being a good enough father to say, like, him. I got you a puppy. He was like, I gave you to another child as a puppy, and he gets to name you now.
Okay.
Really, if we're going to get into the nitty gritty, that's kind of where the metaphor ended up.
Well, I have a better understanding of it now and how much more his life sucks. So, yeah.
At least he had a puppy. Maybe the puppy would lie 90 degrees sideways on the wall someday and we could all enjoy it. You know?
So fucking cute.
So Karn's in a battle with Phyrexia, a battle that he's lived before and he watched his two best friends die in before. Yeah. His two best friends are not with him. They're off on the mana rig somewhere fighting. They have their own story that happens over there. Spoiler alert, they succeed. But Karn doesn't know that. He's desperate. He just watched the love of his life, an airship, fly to her death and kill herself. Trying to stop.
I thought I saw that TLC documentary.
I'm in love with an airship.
I just want you to know that I'm in love with the airship. And things have gotten sexual.
now you sympathize with the father, who's just
exactly.
You're like pinching the bridge of his nose. You're just like, well, okay, that would be hard to relate to when you're a kid,
but if you didn't spend so much time in the whiskey room, maybe you wouldn't have grown sexually attracted to you.
Maybe they wouldn't have developed that relationship. I think Karn needs therapy more than anything. Karn doesn't need friends who live. Karn needs therapy.
Karn, more like carnival, like crazy out there.
Carnival cruise airship.
So they're battling Yawgmoth. That's where the Weatherlight dies. It's the climactic battle of the Phyrexian invasion. Karn, out of people to go to, goes to Urza'n and Gerard, the person he was. Gerard. I've switched back and forth between those names, but assume they're doing the same thing. Jared. He reunites with Urza, the absentee father, and Jared from Subway, the... I'll let you fill in the blanks. So they realize the situation is dire. Gerard, what do you do? You look at Urza, you say, you're 99% mechanical at this point.
You offer him a 6-inch for $5.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
It's a foot long. It's a 12-inch, my guy.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
$5 foot long.
Cut myself short. Yeah.
You give him a bad deal.
Jared only offered me 6 inches. So Gerard takes Urza's eyes, the Might Stone and the Weak Stone, places them inside of Karn, who's notoriously good at building bombs. Karn unleashes a devastating blast of white energy, destroying Yawgmoth and the entirety of the Phyrexian invasion.
Okay, so good.
He puts an end to it. He explodes in whiteness and kills every Phyrexian and Yawgmoth.
He's collected so many mana cards in his like backpack that he just like turned the backpack to tap them, and
he's on 13 lands at this point, man. This is endgame. This is like he just taps them all. He's like, whatever, I cast anything.
Yeah.
The two humans, Urza and Gerard, are also killed in the explosion. So that's Urza's death, 4,205, something like that.
Oh, okay.
But Karn was transformed, becoming the first and so far only artificial planeswalker. So he's the only construct that has ever become a planeswalker.
He finally hit the fucking trauma cap and activated
his spark. That was his trauma cap. Okay, it's clearly higher for constructs because he literally had to go through a lot to get there. But
abuse your robots, kids.
Exactly. when he was first printed, he was a golem, but he's a planeswalker now.
Cool.
Like I said, he interacts with the Gatewatch, who is like Gideon Jura, Jace Bellerin, Liliana Voss, Chandra, and
people we've talked about before.
Exactly. Like people from the Gatewatch that people know, that like Wizards of the Coast has been doing a whole run of the Gatewatch characters. They're the ones who fight Nicol Bolas.
Yeah.
Whereas this is kind of the Dominaria era where people are fighting Yawgmoth. So it'll eventually switch to Bolas being like the main villain, I guess. And Karn, the latest set, War of the Spark, not the latest set, but the latest set featuring Karn is War of the Spark. And he's a planeswalker in there and he interacts with the Gatewatch more.
Okay, cool.
But back on Dominaria, after the dust had settled, Karn felt like he needed to get out. His new babe with the rocking body of a skyship had been destroyed. He killed his father.
Can I put in the exhaust tonight, baby?
Opposed to where? Like the trunk?
I don't know.
Yeah. Backseat on your birthday.
Okay, wait. On a car, which is the butthole? The exhaust or the trunk? What, Jamie got to ask a philosophical question. I don't get to ask a philosophical question.
Let's put it out to Twitter.
The wheels are turning in my head right now. Yeah, which is it?
Exhaust. You don't, like, if you're making the exact, like, comparison to human, the trunk would be like a backpack or like somewhere where you could carry things. And the exhaust is where you're shooting out your waste. And that's your butthole. So it's got to be the exhaust.
You shoot waste. You do shoot waste out of a vagina as well. And that's urine.
Girls pee from their butts. This has been established.
One to one.
So are you calling a vagina a trunk? Like, what is your argument?
My argument is it's not so clear, cut and dry. Like, it's not such an obvious answer as you seem to purport.
If someone has junk in their trunk, that means they have a big butt.
That doesn't mean they have a big butt.
Well, I'm gonna have to hit the buck.
I lean towards your definition, James, where the trunk is the vagina and the exhaust is the butthole.
That's your definition. I only define the trunk as the butthole.
No, you said exhaust is the butthole.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, that's what I said. I was agreeing with you. I was trying to agree with you.
I wanted to disagree with the vagina part.
Jamie went back in time, came back to the present to disagree with himself.
Jamie's the only one who remembers the Phyrexian invasion of the butthole. So, let me wrap this up. I got one paragraph left.
Okay. Please do, yeah, please. Get me out of here.
So, Karn feels like he needs to get out, okay? He watched his girlfriend die. He watched his dad die. He's not sure that his best friends are still alive, although he could probably
watch them die sort of.
But he's still kind of depressed. You know, he's got all his memories back now, and he's just as depressed as he was before. He's still pretty depressed. So he leaves. He finds his own plane, which he decides to call Argentum, the plane of mathematical perfection.
We have talked about, you've mentioned this before. I've heard, I remember that word. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that word, but you don't remember the context.
No.
So he goes to another plane. Obviously, he still cares about Dominaria. So he's like, well, I'm leaving, but I want to make sure it's still safe. Like, we defeated Yawgmoth, we defeated Phyrexia, but we're never sure that they're ever truly gone. So he creates probes so that he sends back to Dominaria to live in Dominaria and monitor the situation. One of which breaks, becomes corrupted, and becomes a much sought-after artifact known as the Mirari.
Oh, yes!
Mirari!
So the end of our four-part Mirari was talking about how Jessica goes to Argentum, meets somebody who calls himself Lord Macht, who turns out to be Karn, who created the Mirari as a probe sent to monitor Dominaria.
Right. Holy shit, yeah.
So that's kind of tying together.
He just hit me with a werewolf-tipped pickaxe and brought all my memories back. Goddamn.
He sent the free Google Home, and goddamn, did everyone want to pick it up and let them know what was going on at home.
Yeah, so that kind of ties together the Brothers War arc, which was our first arc, and then the Jessica arc, which was our third arc of the Magic the Gathering arcs that we've done. We did Super Friends in the middle there.
Awesome. That was a good job, Ethan. Yeah. Tied it all together.
It was good fun. If you guys like the episode, do let us know. I'm available on Twitter at Ethan the Deadman. We have a Discord. It's somewhere at loreboys.com or probably in the description of the episode somewhere. Or
usually go to loreboys.com and in the about section you can find it. If you're looking for a definite way to find it, loreboys.com about is there, right?
Yeah. Or just like go on D2, look for a US East server called Loreboys and ask me, because that's happened to me. So far, somebody came into my room called Lore Boys and was like, "Hey, dude, do you like Diablo 2 lore?" I was like, "I sure do." And he was like, "Cool, I got a Facebook page dedicated entirely to Diablo 2 lore." It was the Biblioteca of Blizzard, so I'll give him a shout out because they do all Blizzard lore, but he specifically was in charge of the Diablo lore. So he hopped in my Diablo 2 game, plugged himself. So I plugged myself back to him. So that's a good way that you can find the Discord if you really want to.
Yeah, if you're playing Diablo 2 on the US East servers, check out Lore Boys when you're trying to join a game, or join I'm Gay. I like to make it that because people have to type it to join me. Yeah. And I can also make people uncomfortable by asking them questions when we're in game, because I'm completely comfortable with my own sexuality, but a lot of people aren't. So it's fun to mess with them that
especially
way.
Gamers.
Yeah, especially gamers, because they got a lot of fucking rising left to do, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
So Lore Boys, Borlois, or I'm Gay. And we use Borlois when Lore Boys, because if you create a server and you need to remake, it'll say like Lore Boys is already a server, so we make it Lore Boys.
Play D2 with us, so hardcore characters. You can only join us if you're hardcore.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Peter, where can we find you on the internet?
At Pete O'Donohue on Twitter and at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram and theloreboys.com. And I guess old Jambo, you want to plug yourself here before we plug ourselves?
Twitch.com/TV.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, okay, well,
it was my mistake.
James just had a stroke on air.
Okay, go ahead, Pete, your turn.
Fine again.
We're going full circle. Where we're going like one way and then back.
Yeah.
We're doing a round robin.
We've gotten a couple of people who have messaged us in regards to this, and then just today, like an hour before recording, somebody messaged us on Instagram asking about Loreboys merch. At this time, there is no official cashola, unless you want to go to our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. But I'm going to be setting up in the near future on theloreboys.com a make your own merch page for just with transparent PNGs. So if you have a way to put it on a shirt or a mug or whatever, download it, do whatever you want with it. There's going to be logos and thumbnail art and corn and check on Texas, all that shit that we've mentioned in the past. it's all going to be there. And then maybe after the epidemic, we're going to look into some way to actually sell it to people. But for the moment, first things first is basically an arts and crafts section. Your own fruit roll-up of the Loreboys where you can punch out the shape of the thing that you want.
You got to send that to me so I can upload into Animal Crossing so then I can put out the code for Animal Crossing Loreboy stuff. I just realized that it's a real thing we could do and we should.
Okay, yeah. Explain that to me in detail afterwards.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Pete, I have half a mind to pay you to produce a two things, check in on, or don't mess with Texas, check in on Texas shirt.
Finger
because
pistols.
You've been saying it for a while and it hasn't happened yet. And I'm like, I just want to pay him to make it happen because I might wear a shirt that says that. So this episode was brought to you by the Loreboys, but it was also brought to you by Triple the Cheese on Discord and Patreon. He requested we do more Magic Gathering lore, pick up on the Mirari. I didn't keep going on the Mirari, who turns into a creature called the Memnarch. I kind of wanted to get there, but I wanted to lay the basework for Karn, so maybe someday we'll do that. But
Karn's name backward is Narc. Is that Rela? Is that?
It's Narak, but pretty close.
Oh, Frick. Frick backwards is Narc. I mean,
yeah, Frick backwards is Frick. So Triple the Cheese, thank you so much for your support. Anybody else who wants to give us a suggestion, Discord is definitely the best way to do it, but we also take emails. So loreboyspodcast@gmail.com or contact@loreboys.com. Either of those will get through to us. And thank you guys for listening. It means the world to us. Anybody who wants to support us, patreon.com/theloreboys is the CAD or USD or EUR way to do it. If you don't trust them and you want Loreboys bucks, there's only one way to get Loreboys bucks, and that's Loreboys Prime. Oh, yeah. Of course, you'll get Loreboys bucks, but you will be contractually obligated to give those Loreboys bucks right back to us because
or write all our future episodes.
Yeah, or either or become a Loreboy yourself. There's no way to tell, you know. So in preparation for having you guys become Loreboys yourselves or girls, lore folk. Although once you take the werewolf tipped pickaxe to the brain, you do become a Loreboy, whether or not, however you identify, you do become a Loreboy. You know, it's not Loreboy isn't a gender; it's a way of life. so we're offering werewolf tip pickaxes to all our listeners. You can use it to restore memories to your artificial constructs, or you can use it to turn into a Loreboy. It's however you best feel to use it.
You can also just use it like a normal pickaxe and hit rocks.
That is true. Yeah. It will turn the pickaxes into dumb guys who want to start a podcast, though. So,
yes.
You know, keep that in mind before you go swinging it away in a mineshaft. And we want to hear from you guys. So send us $32.29 a month, and we will send you guys a werewolf tip pickaxe. And we want to see the most top five creative uses for the werewolf tip pickaxe. We gave you guys two already. We want to see more creative than that. Maybe you can develop into a boomerang or something creative, you know. that's really what we want to say. We want to get feedback from you guys. You can post it in the Discord. We'll put it on our YouTube channel. Do something with your werewolf tip pickaxe. And I guess for now, at least, that would constitute
a
Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.